Dermot and Dave.
Conversation, crack,
and the music you love.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Today.
Arranged marriages and dowries are something that we may have heard about on a television show or in a film, but it's something that we on this side of the world tend to know very little about, despite the fact that dowries have been illegal in India since the 1960s. They continue to remain prevalent across many communities in India and, in fact, have increased in value since they were made illegal. But what are they and how do they work and how do they compare to our own wedding arrangements here at home? Gaurav Chiplunkar from the University of Virginia and co-author of Marriage Markets and the Rise of Dowry in India is on the line now. Good morning, Gaurav.
Good morning.
So the whole area of dowry is not something we're massively familiar with here. Obviously, we would have, been exposed to it through our media and, you know, TV shows and movies and that kind of thing. But it's not the norm here in Ireland. Can you explain to us just exactly what a dowry is?
Yeah, so dowry is basically a payment that made during marriage, the bride and the groom, they exchange gifts or in many cases money as well. So dowry is the payment basically made by the father of the bride to the groom's family. And it's pretty common across a lot of countries in the world. In fact, the opposite practice also exists, which is called bride price, which is when the groom's family pays the bride's family. And that's very common, for example, in Southeast Asia and Africa. Dowry is mostly common in South Asia and a couple of countries in Africa as well.
Mm. Okay, and one of the pieces that I read when preparing to have a chat to you is that it's actually illegal in India since the 60s.
Yes, de jure it is illegal in 61, and then in 84 they further, I think, strengthened the anti-dowry law, and then in 2000s they had another law which tried to strengthen the previous laws, but obviously it still as a practice exists in many marriages in India.
So despite all the efforts by the lawmakers to stamp out this practice, why has it continued to thrive and actually increase over the years?
So that's a great question. I think it's basically a deeply rooted cultural practice that has been taking place in India forever in terms of exchanges that happen during marriage. And I think the law has enough loopholes in terms of even if you ban the money exchange part of this, but you could exchange gifts, right? I mean, I can't stop my wife's family from giving me a car or an apartment. Mm. That's not illegal in a way.
And what kind of amounts of money or values of gifts are given across most of the marriages?
Yeah, so in our research, what we find is essentially that the average dowry payment is about 1 to 2 times the annual household income of the bride. So it's a sizable amount.
Yeah, that is a lot.
Yeah. Is it specific to one religion or is it across all denominations?
So it's mostly in the Hindu practice, but exchange of gifts in a way happens across many marriages, including non-Hindu marriages as well.
Yeah, I suppose, well, here it's tradition. I don't know how often it's actually upheld, but it's kind of expected that the father of the bride pays for the wedding. I don't know if this is news to you, Dave. Dave has two little daughter twins. His jaw just hit the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's another way. I mean, we don't know if that would be recorded as dowry, for example. But but yes, it's also like the sharing of expenses. It's like, you know, taking care of the guests or even in some cases, very direct or indirect gifts that are being given during marriage. I mean, all of these practices are very, very common.
Mm. And in terms of your research, have you found any negativity around the process? I mean, for example, why did they make it illegal? Where was the negativity, the negative side of this?
Yes, I think a couple of places, right? So one is just the fact that there is dowry-related violence that the bride experiences after marriage. So if the father of the bride is not able to pay enough for the daughter's marriage, then when she gets married, the in-laws are more likely to, you know, have domestic violence against the bride. Mm. And then the second is just the burden on the father. You know, suppose a daughter is born, then, you know, you have female infanticide that is very, very common. And one of the primary reasons for that is because of the expected future payments that he will have to make during her marriage.
Wow. So there are instances of parents taking the life of their daughter because of this burden.
Yeah, so that is one of the leading causes for female infanticide, yes.
Yeah. I suppose, is it prevalent amongst, say, more working class communities, or is it still something that would be practiced amongst the wealthy?
So it's practiced across the spectrum. In fact, what we show in our paper is that about 90% of marriages from 1930 to about 2000, that's where our data goes from, practice dowry. And this is irrespective of the caste or irrespective of the income of the household. Everybody basically pays dowry.
And what percentage of marriages in Indian culture are still arranged?
Oh, lots. About, I would say, over 85% of marriages are arranged by the parents of the bride and the groom.
And has that trended downwards? I mean, is 85% where it's at now? It was higher, or is that standard the way it's been for a long time?
Yeah, so I think surprisingly, it hasn't moved a lot. It has come down a little bit, but it's mostly come down in the urban areas. So education has helped a little bit. And you know, now you have the youth of the country who goes and works in different cities and they stay away from home for a longer time. And so hopefully that's going to break the trend of arranged marriages. But predominantly in the rural areas, even now, it's mostly arranged marriages.
Does the dowry situation shine a light on a larger problem in terms of women's rights? You know, it's upsetting almost to think that so many women are exposed to domestic violence because of something, for instance, like a dowry. I mean, is there any movement towards women having a greater say in their own destiny?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that there is a lot of sensitivity and a lot of civil society action that has happened around this issue. But I think no, in the sense that it's a very endemic problem that's really hard to, you know, overcome. It'll take deeply rooted cultural change to bring about that, you know, massive revolution in case of such practices.
And, you know, the practice of dowry, as you said, is so widespread. I mean, do you, based on your research, do you think that there will come a time when this simply won't be a factor, or be a factor only in small percentages? Or is it, as you said, so widespread that it's, you know, it's part of the culture, part of the culture of India?
So we actually find that dowry payments have gone down. So people are actually, in terms of real amount of money, they're paying lesser money over time. But the prevalence of dowry hasn't gone down. So people are still expected to exchange gifts, even though the denominations have gone down over time. And so one of the factors we hope that's going to contribute to this is the education of females, which really has picked up over the last 20 or 30 years. So we hope that's one factor that drives the practice of dowry down over time.
In terms of our own marriage statistics here in Ireland, the age for marriage is creeping up all the time, and now it's in and around age 30. What age would the daughters be when the father generally sets about trying to arrange a marriage for his daughter?
Yeah, so that age in India has been going up over time. And one of the factors of this has been, at least in urban areas, this has been women getting educated. So if not anything, until you finish your college degree or something, people in urban areas tend to hold off. In the rural areas, the age is much lower. So ideally somewhere in the age of 15 to 18 or 20, that, you know, 20 would be an upper limit in the rural areas to get their daughter married. Whereas in the urban areas, it's somewhere in the early or mid-20s, by 24, 25.
And I noticed from your stats that less than 1% of these end in divorce, which it's for life.
Absolutely. Divorce is extremely uncommon in India. And most of it is also to do with just cultural relations within the family itself. So, you know, an extended family setup, or you have, you know, tons of relatives from both sides of the family who will try and, you know, not make this practice very, very common. Though it has been increasing, it's still a very, very tiny proportion of total marriages.
Would it be a source of shame, perhaps, on a family, an extended family, if they felt a marriage ended in divorce?
Yes. So it's both factors. So one is that because there are so many people, there is a good support system the bride and groom have. Like, you know, if I wanted to go and talk to someone, there are literally tons of people I could go and talk to. But on the other side of this, as you are saying, there's also like a shame factor to this, which is that society will judge you if your marriage ended up in divorce.
I know you call it a family support structure. I'm not sure if I was having problems with my missus that I would be rushing out to talk to the in-laws about it. And they're like, no, we're here to support you.
And one of those other stats I noticed was that 90% of couples will live with the husband's family after marriage.
Exactly. So it is a patrilineal system. And so, yes, the bride will be expected to move into the husband's household. Though in some parts of India, it is actually matrilineal as well.
Okay.
So you'll find that the husband actually moves.
Right. Yeah. But by and large, it's the women that move in with the husband's family.
Well, here everybody's right. Freaking out because I suppose maybe in Western culture in general, if the married couple moves straight in with somebody's parents, it's like something's wrong, or you're saving for a house, or it's only temporary,
right.
Or you know. Whereas, you know, it's the opposite there. If you're not doing that, then there's, you know, something's out of place.
That's right. So, yeah, I mean, now I think with the younger generations, it's less common, at least in urban areas, where the young couple would want a house that's separate. Mm. But still, I mean, by and large, at least in the rural areas, for example, yeah, you're expected to go and live in the husband's household.
You're obviously based yourself in, you know, in the States, in the University of Virginia. So do you find that when Indian families move to other countries where those practices aren't generally followed, do you find that still they will tend to stick to their own Indian practices and arranged marriages and dowries continue, even though they're not on the soil of India?
They try. It's harder to pull that off. but there is definitely an effort that's made to arrange for the right match. And dowry, I think, is less in terms of the hard part is that it's not termed dowry. It's mostly termed as exchange of gifts and so on and so forth. So I don't know how you would think about that as, you know, genuinely, I just want to gift you, maybe not a Ferrari or something, but I want to gift you, you know, jewelry is a very common gift that's
right.
For example, in marriages. But yeah, in the States, I think the practice is much lesser, though it is still quite prevalent as well.
Mm. Okay. Well, Gaurav, thank you so much. It was something that we didn't know very much about before we talked to you, and now we are far more informed. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Dermot and Dave. Weekdays from 9 a.m. Today.